And now, a guy whose one radio show delivers more than most guys can deliver in 1 month. Phil Hendry. And thank you, Russ Mitchell. If you were here, thank you, me. Sounding like Russ Mitchell. Welcome to the program. I thought that was a good way to lead things off. It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Lots of business that was done today. I was on the phone with my close personal friend and partner, Ron Hartenbaum, and with Debbie and with Liz and with my brother, Alex. And we were talking business, talking the radio business. In the meantime, I'm talking to another very deep, close personal friend that I've known for maybe a couple of months, Nikki McKee. And she informs me of some gouging that's going on. I'm kidding. No, she didn't.
Don't get her in trouble with the people that she's renting from.
I'm not going to get her in trouble. Not going to get her in trouble at all. She just tells me that they give her a 90-day period to re-sign another 15-month agreement on the lease. But a 90-day period is supposed to mean something, correct, General?
Yes, it means 90 days. You have 90 days to make up your mind.
Exactly, but they're not giving her 90 days. They're saying that you've got 90 days till you sign the new lease, but in that 90-day period, we're going to raise the rent on you if you don't sign by a certain date. They're not giving her 90 days. That's all I'm saying.
That doesn't make any sense the way you just explained it.
Well, what do you mean they're not giving her 90 days?
In other words, if you get 90 days to make up your mind whether you want to sign another lease with a company to rent an apartment from them, to put it the way you put it, Margaret.
Yes, you don't have to be sarcastic, Phil. I accentuate so that people understand the word. The word.
Don't blow my ear out, okay?
Get it!
Well, I want to make sure you understand that.
All right, I understand that. I understand that. But what I'm saying is, if they give you 90 days, they give you 90 days. Now, come to find out that in the 90 days that they give you to make up your mind whether you want to re-sign a lease with the company or not, they say, well, it's not exactly 90. We want by February 7th a decision. And if you don't make your mind up by February 7th, we're going to raise the price even more. Now, they've already told her that her rent's going to go up. But if she doesn't make up her mind as to the new higher rent, her and her young gentleman, her betrothed, she's spoken for, you know.
What do you mean?
She has a young man in her life. She's with a guy.
But yeah, they've spoken for.
Not they've spoken for. She spoke.
No, he spoke for him.
No, the way it is she's spoken for by him. He spoke up.
Nobody spoke up. I used the wrong word. They're together, okay?
Well, are they engaged?
Sure, they're engaged. They're engaged. She just said no, but you know what? Oh, Nikki, I'm sorry. I had your fader down because I didn't want to hear you, because I want to lay out everything wrong, and then you can come in and correct me. Is that
Sounds
okay?
Good.
Yeah. I know you're not engaged, but I wanted to clean it up. And anyway,
well, there's nothing unclean about it. She's with this man, and she is the primary breadwinner, and he does what, draw cartoons and pretends he's someday going to work for Peter Jackson?
Pretty much, yeah. So she's got this rent that's going to go up at the end of the lease. Understood. It happens. It happens all over America. Not a problem. You know, that's the way of the world. You know, leases end, prices go up, and we move on with life. And if you can afford it, great. If you can't, you got to move out and move someplace else. However, in that 90-day window, if I'm misunderstanding this, Nikki, you go ahead and you lay it on me. In that 90-day window that they give you, they have given you another sort of smaller window. They've said, well, yes, you have the 90-day window to make up your mind. But if you don't make up your mind by February 7th, we're raising the price. So they're not giving you 90 days. Now, tell me how I'm wrong.
Well, and now I'm starting to think it really isn't 90 days to make a decision.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
the 90
correct.
Days is really just, hey, your lease is up in 3 months. That's it.
And in that 3 month period that you are allowed to, you know, figure out whether you're going to stay or go, in that 3 month period, they're taking the liberty to mess with your head. On February 7th, the price will go up even more if you don't sign at the price that's going up anyway. And if you don't go up at the 7th, then it's going to be... So you're not getting a 90-day window. You're getting, you're being screwed with. They're violating the terms of the lease. That's the technical. And I would strongly suggest And you don't have to call Bruce Williams on this. Just go with Phil Henry on this one.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, Nikki. Phil is not Bruce Williams. He's not a radio advice person. And what about the Dolans? Have you called them?
What do you need to call the Dolans for?
I'd call the Dolans or Sonny Block.
Sonny Block's in prison.
Yeah, Sonny Block's in prison, isn't he? Don't call anybody in prison, Nikki. Don't call anybody. You don't have to call. Call a lawyer. Call a lawyer, okay? She there or is she not?
I'm here.
Okay. Call a lawyer.
Yes, sir.
Or don't. I don't care. You know, don't. I'm just telling you. I mean, I'm telling Nikki this, you guys, only because this happens all the time. And I don't know why. And I don't know what's wrong with people in this world that they can't just stick to the terms of the agreement that they signed. There's always someone out there signing an agreement with somebody and then deciding that they're going to somehow try to go around it. Or they don't understand something called the spirit of the agreement. And the spirit of the agreement is that you try to help the work situation so that the two of you mutually benefit. You don't just hold to the very specific of it so that it is unworkable and people can't get anything done. Because if you hold to the black and white of any agreement, 9 times out of 10, that leaves a lot of room for failure. Just the basic black and white of any agreement. That's why we use in the world this term, the spirit of the agreement. What is that? The spirit of the agreement is simply this. Then we've signed an agreement, it's legal, but the spirit is that we have gone into business with each other because we want to succeed. We've gone into business with each other because we want to succeed, we want to see each other succeed, we want to prosper. And so we do what we can within the framework of that agreement to help each other and to move the enterprise along. That's the spirit of the agreement. And when you're in a deal with somebody, as I have been, and you're in a deal with a guy who is strictly going to go by the letter of the deal, and he gets his ego bent out of shape because you may know a little bit more about the business than he does, and he doesn't want to be told that this goes in here. He wants it to be told that it goes in there, and he doesn't want to believe that it's yellow. It's actually blue, and it becomes a problem having to do with pride and ego and nothing to do with business. You got a problem, man. You got a problem because you're locked into a deal with a guy that's got personality problems, that's got, his mama. As Vernon Dozier would say, right?
Yeah, Vernon say that guy, he wants his mama.
What is the, he wants his mama? I don't understand that. Vernon Dozier is just a friend of ours. He's a football coach, and he feels that everything boils down to a man's relationship with his mother and the fact that he was taken off the nipple too soon.
Hey.
Thank you. All right, tonight we have Vernon Dozier on with us, as a matter of fact, to talk about the President's State of the Union speech, which is still going on here at 7:15. I think that's very interesting, very healthy. The president continues to speak to the country. We don't have time to listen to it because we're on the air right now. So our number is 855-500-7445 and online at philhenryshow.com, where you can listen to the show free, a live stream on our website right now. And if you want, you can also listen to the show on TuneIn, on a dedicated Phil Henry channel on TuneIn. And if you've got a radio station near you carrying the Phil Henry Show, well, then that's all good, too. You know, you can check it out there at philhenryshow.com, the Phil Henry Show, and TuneIn. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Is this
hippy-dippy thing?
All right, anyway, it's Big Star, and it's a big star. Every time I think of Big Star, I think of a Carl's Jr. hamburger. That's kind of where I go with...
Anyway...
Phil Henry Show, Margaret Gray with us, Bud Dickman, and the General Galen Shaw and Robert Leonard. Now, Margaret, your final point on this, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about it because, you know, it's up to our good friend Nikki and her man Curtis whether they want to take it up the giggy with the Wawa brush, you know.
I think that is very unfair. Phil, Frank and I have owned rental property. We've had renters. We have owned apartment buildings, as you know. And Frank's very good friend, God rest his soul, Jerry Buss. Jerry has owned, and so has Donald Sterling, pieces of property. Now then, can I get some water?
Look, Margaret, we're not going to wait for a speech, okay?
I'm not going to give a speech. I'm just saying they have a right to increase their rent.
I'm not saying they don't have a right to increase their rent. You're not listening to what we're saying. I'm not saying that they don't. Of course they have a right to increase their rent. What they don't have a right to do is to say you have a 90-day window within which you can make up your mind whether you want to pay the extra $200 and sign another 15-month lease, or you would like to say, oh, thank you very much, it's been a pleasure knowing you, and we're out of here. but they're not getting their 90 days.
Now, why are you saying that?
Yes, I don't understand. Why are you saying that?
Because Nikki just said they have been given a letter saying that by February 7th, that price that they were told, the $200 increase, is going to go up. And I said, was that something that was that comports with the original lease? She said, well, no. You know, we have a 90-day, and we know that it's going to go up $200, but this tells us that if we don't make a decision by the 7th, now our, you're not locked in anymore at that price. And that's messed up, because either you got 90 days or you don't. What does the 90 days represent?
The 90 days represents...
if I may, because we've also owned rental property, and I have rented when I was in the Army as just a young enlisted man and as a non-commissioned officer, of course, we had to rent a lot of real dumps, real garbage dumps. Lived in them, slept in them, and ate in them. And some real pigsties.
Were these were really insufficient places to live, right?
No, it's that Patsy, my wife, was just a bad housekeeper. The houses were great.
Well, what are you saying?
I'm saying to you that I lived in some toilet bowls because my wife doesn't know how to vacuum.
What's that got to do with the landlord?
Well, it's...
Daryl, it's got nothing to do with it.
What I'm talking about here is the landlord.
Yes, and we were good landlords.
Fine. You sign a lease, the guy says 90 days. Okay, great. Thank you very much for the 90 days. You make up your mind. And if you don't, now I don't understand one thing, and maybe you can help me with this, Nick. When they say 90 days, does that mean you have all the way on up to the very last day of that lease to decide whether you're staying or not?
No. The 90 days is basically just representative of the last 3 months of our lease. Because yesterday was exactly 1 year that we've been there. And since we signed a 15-month lease, it's just basically, hey, it's time to sign your renewal or not. And
your renewal, it is understood, goes up $200.
Right. So as this of right now.
And that is articulated in your lease.
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying. This
it doesn't give an exact amount in the lease. It's basically you may have an increase of your rent. And now they're quoting us what that increase will be. And
Get this $200 from?
They give it to us. They base it on property.
When did they tell you that it would go up $200?
Today.
And when did they tell you that it would go up more by the 7th?
Today. That was all in that letter.
Oh, well, then they haven't really...
It's not going to go up on the 7th. It's going to go up $200 if we re-sign effective at the end of the 15th.
Wait a minute, Nikki. Phil's rubbing his head. You don't see. He's rubbing his bald head.
What's wrong with that?
Because it doesn't look like you understand.
Yeah, it looks like you're getting a headache over it.
I'm not getting a headache, Nikki. I'm now thinking that maybe they are within their rights.
Oh, okay.
Because they said that they're going to raise your rent, but nothing in the lease that you signed originally limited the amount of money that they were going to raise your rent by. Nothing in the lease you signed originally limited it to one price increase. So there's really, it just said it could go up, right? It didn't say it would go up. It said
right.
It could.
Right. It's basically they will quote you when it's time to renew.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And, okay. All right, man. Sorry, Nick. I didn't mean to,
Didn't mean to screw it up.
Screw anything up. All right, we're going to get Vernon Dozier in here. We got all kinds of crap that we got to do here, and I don't mean crap, but I mean that there are a great many things to discuss. The President of the United States has just finished the State of the Union address, and I don't know, did you guys see anything that,
Yeah, I want to say that I'm very glad the President, has articulated himself in his State of the Union speech, and I liked it a lot.
What did you like about it, Robert? Is there anything in there?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's just good to see the president there standing up for people, and I thought it was good.
All right. I liked it, too, and I didn't really listen all that carefully, but I just like the fact that there were a lot of guys frowning that...
Well, what does that mean?
It means I like seeing a lot of guys frowning that Obama is a thorn in the side to. And to me, that's fun, you know. And Boehner is the one guy that never... He's the gift that never stops giving, Boehner, with that kisser of his, man. You'd swear to God that guy had lemons for dinner, you know.
Well, John Boehner is a man who's has come up very difficult, Phil. He's had a very tough life.
I'm not doubting that he has had a tough life. He's a guy that's got that sourpuss look on his face. John Boehner would have been my hero if he'd have stood up to those Tea Party freaks sooner than he did. I mean, it was like the last thing that, I think the last thing on his mind was pissing off anybody in the Tea Party. And why the hell he cared, I don't know. You know, he should have just told those guys to go pound sand, to grab their waxed lips and their chattering teeth and their whoopee cushions and their joy buzzers and get out of there. Because they're freaky, man, and they were scaring everybody.
Well, they were scaring John Boehner.
Yeah, and now they imagine themselves as having some power. I don't know, the whole thing weird. See, I'm even fracturing my grammar. Vernon Dozier is with us. Vernon is a high school teacher in Glendale, California, and decidedly opposed to President Obama. Are you a Tea Party person, Vernon?
Am I a Tea Party? I wouldn't call myself a Tea Party person. I'm not. As you said right there, Phil, I'm not running around with a clown hat on and a horn. When I think of the Tea Party, I think of people running around with a horn and almost like the Marx Brothers, you know, with that Aruga horn, you know, that do-do-do-do. No, I'm opposed to President Obama for a number of reasons. The first and foremost being that I don't think there's substance there. I think what you have with President Obama is... I think it's unfair. I think it's very unfair for him to stand up there and give a speech with the kind of personality that he has and the way he's able to smile and make people feel at home and the way he's able to turn around. He even had John Boehner standing up and taking a bow and giving the president a thumbs up. I was amazed at that. Boehner, and you just pointed out, Boehner's a weak man. I don't know where anybody ever thought he has strength. John Boehner is weak-willed and has a weak mind. I do not like weakness. I've never liked weakness.
Well, let's get to the nitty-gritty here. You say the president unfairly uses his personality, and he was even charming John Boehner. But isn't that part of the job? You're a salesman. You're a leader. It's about charisma.
Well, yeah, it's part of the job. But it's part of the job. But it's so effective that, as I said, anybody with a weak mind, a weak will, easily led, someone that's suggestible is going to fall prey to this, as we just saw Boehner do. And I even at one point saw Mitch McConnell sitting and looking at Obama with a kind of, I don't want to say an adoring look. It wasn't that, but it was a look of, he was in awe. And I don't want to say in awe either. It's just that Obama was able to take two of the real hard cases in the Congress, Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, and have both of them a little bit buffaloed, a little bit charmed, I think is the word.
Tell me, Margaret.
Yes, I saw the same thing that Vernon saw. Mitch McConnell had a look that was, it was a blank stare, but it was, you used the word suggestible.
Yeah, suggestible meaning, I'm not saying hypnotized, but one can be hypnotized when one is suggestible, not suggestive, but suggestible.
Yes, the word suggestible means that you are able to be influenced at the subconscious level. Correct?
Exactly. And so that's what I saw. I saw Mitch McConnell staring. And if I could give it a sound, Phil, and I do this with my students, I say, you can't describe it. Give it a sound. If I could give the stare that Mitch McConnell had for President Obama tonight, if I could give it a sound, it would sound like this. That was actually my wife. That was Kimberly.
That was Kimberly singing into the phone?
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I needed her to do, it's like a science fiction thing. Honey, come here. Do it again. Okay, hold on. Now, this is what, and I'm not trying to be clownish, Phil, but I can't. It was the stare. I don't want to say it was a stare of catatonia. I don't want to say it was a blank stare of the mental, of a deficient mental state. I don't want to say that, but it was the stare of a man.
Well, what, like the stare of a hypnotized man?
I would say it's almost like the stare of a hypnotized man. But I know Margaret and I are reluctant to use that.
Yeah, I don't want to say that Mitch McConnell was hypnotized, but he was definitely transfixed.
1 minute.
And staring. Have Kimberly.
Kimberly, honey, here's what that stare would have sounded like if it had a sound. Go ahead. honey, don't walk away from the phone. Do it good. She's got to get in the kitchen, Phil.
Well, I didn't mean to anger her.
Are you angry, honey? Are you angry? Do it again, just one more time.
30 seconds.
God. Wow, that hurts.
All right. We'll get back to Vernon Dozier and our discussion on President Obama and, of course, this evening's State of the Union address. A State of the Union address that had a great many people happy, I'm sure a great many unhappy. We are talking about, with Vernon, President Obama's ability to transfix even John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com on TuneIn as well. Get a TuneIn app for that smartphone and carry the Phil Hendry Show wherever you want to carry it, morning, noon, and night, Monday through Friday. It don't make no, never mind. On the line with us is Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. We're talking with the coach and the social sciences teacher up there of so many of our fine young people about President Obama's State of the Union address. Now, Representative Kathy McMorris Rodgers is on with the Republican response to the president. And I won't make any comment on it other than to say, how do you write a rebuttal when you haven't heard the speech yet? All right.
Yay!
That's not. No, Phil. They already know what the speech is going to be about. You're not making any. You're not scoring points there.
Well, I thought that was very cute. It's true. How do you write a rebuttal when you don't know the speech?
All right. Let's get Vernon on here. Where was I wrong there, Vernon?
Well, I mean, first of all, there ain't nothing that President Obama's going to say in a State of the Union address that the Republicans don't already know. And the fact that they have this young lady giving the response, I think, is a. I think it's the Republicans saying that we are, you know, we've got women and we want to put our women out front. I think that's great. I think it's great. I believe that women should be out front. But you can see sometimes women, when you put them out front, they're going to do the things that they want to do. There's nothing wrong with that. But you just saw what my wife did when I asked her to give a sound to the face that Mitch McConnell had, and she threw the phone, you know.
Well, I didn't want to cause a problem.
She threw the phone.
Yes, she did, honey. Well, I know she's saying to me, well, she wasn't angry, but she needed to get in the kitchen. I know you weren't angry, honey, but, hey, Kimberly, do Mitch McConnell's face one more time, please. Just one more time, honey. She threw the phone at me. Why do you do that?
Because I think you're beginning to irritate her a little bit.
You don't need to have her keep doing that, Vernon, number one. And I think you're trotting her out like she's a... Like she is a trained monkey, almost.
No, I'm not. I'm simply using my wife's beautiful singing voice, and I know you sing, Margaret, to give a representation of the stare, which I'd taken a phone call from my uncle Pete, who is my father's brother, and he's been my closest uncle my whole life, and he said, did you see the bug-eyed stare? And I said, well, what? He said, on McConnell's face, McConnell had the bug-eyed look. And
now, what does that mean?
Well, it's saying our family, anybody that just got what's called the bulkhead stare or the bug-eyed stare, they're staring, and with Kimberly, you put it together. If I say, honey, if I say bug-eyed stare, what sound would you put on that? Jesus.
What?
Well, she's giving me a look like she would just as soon take those carving knives she's going to use on that London broil she just pulled out of the oven. You'd just as soon stick those in me, wouldn't you? You would, wouldn't you? Wow.
All right, let's quit talking to your wife, if you don't mind, Vernon, and get it back on track here, because you're starting to scare me with some of the conversation.
Well, I'm not trying to scare you, but I just... Okay, never mind.
Can I ask you something, Vernon? Your wife is there in the kitchen, and she's looking at you with these carving knives because you're what? Because you're asking her to put a sound to Mitch McConnell's stare?
To Mitch McConnell's bulkhead stare. See?
Well, whether it's a bulkhead stare or a bug-eyed stare or whatever you want to call it, the stare that Mitch McConnell was giving the president tonight, John Boehner's charmed look, and all of the other supposed opponents of the president that were giving him at least his fair due and treating him with respect should not be the object of ridicule. Don't you agree?
I think, Phil, what you just said there is very, very naive.
Why is that naive? I think Phil is trying, Coach.
Hold on for just a second. If you don't mind, General, I don't mean to be rude.
Go ahead.
I think Phil is being naive if he thinks that Mitch McConnell and John Boehner were simply being polite. I'm one of the few people in my party, the Republican Party, to tell it like it is. I want to tell it like it is, because I think the Republican rank and file had better know that some of the leaders that we've got in Congress right now, the congressional leadership of the Republican Party, is giving it the bulkhead stare. They're all bug-eyed and going, ooh. And I'm saying that because I think we need strength right now. We need strength. We need determination. We need people that are going to lead the Republican Party into the future and not give it that bulkhead, that eyeball thing. Just one more time, baby. If I said to you, Phil, well, what kind of leadership do we have in the Republican Party and the Congress? You might say, well, it's obstinate. I know, because you're sort of a liberal, you know.
Well, I look at it. I know it doesn't mean anything by now, even though I've said it. I'm a pragmatist. I like to see what the country needs. I don't necessarily consider myself any of those things. But okay, if you want to call me a liberal, go ahead. I'm through trying to fight it.
I'm saying, you know, I would say, you know, you would say, well, they're obstinate and they're not getting things done. And I would say that they're weak-willed, weak-minded. These are weak men, and I can't tell you how much I hate that, you know. And then I'd cue my wife. What kind of a stare was Mitch McConnell giving? Go ahead, honey. See, you're messing that up. No, you're doing it on purpose.
Okay, I don't want to interrupt, but this is getting a little asinine.
What is?
The asking your wife to give a sound to the stare that Mitch McConnell had for president.
I don't know what you're laughing at, Phil.
Why are you taking his side? You're more liberal than me.
Because I think the point needs to be made that the president was, in fact, charming Mitch McConnell right out of...
Go ahead. I think I know what you're going to say. You know, I think I know what she's going to say. You may think that you're paying a compliment to President Obama, but I don't think you are, but go ahead.
All right, I will say it. President Obama was charming Mitch McConnell right out of that old man's shorts.
Wow.
Okay, what's so terrible? What's so bad about that?
Well, okay.
And I don't say that for any reason other than the fact that Mitch McConnell was right there in the president's hand.
Yeah, I'll bet he was.
Hey, Vernon, enough with the suggestive comments and whether or not your wife can make the sound of Mitch McConnell's stare. I'm not interested. What I'm interested in here is, if all of that is true, so what? So what? So the president's a charming guy.
When the president of the United States...
Hold on. Phil makes a good point, and I'd like to hear you address that, if you wouldn't mind, Vernon. So what if the president is charming? What difference does it make to the price of tea in China? And I think that's what we'd all like to know.
What I'm saying is this. When the president comes on with that olive oil charm and that Guinea smile... And,
Whoa, hold on.
What do you mean, the olive oil charm and the Guinea smile?
That's from The Godfather. He talked about that.
Yeah, it's from The Godfather, Dickman. What about it?
What has that got to do with Obama?
I'm telling you, he's coming on tonight with the olive oil smile and the Guinea charm, and he's got that guy McConnell to it. Okay, that's the stare.
What sound does Boehner's stare have, as long as we're doing this?
Phil, don't entertain this, please.
No. What sound does it have?
Honey, what did Boehner's stare have? What sound? That one. Thanks, babe.
Why don't you hire your wife out to do sound effects?
Hey, Mr. Henry, you're talking about my wife now. You got to be careful.
Why don't you hire her out to do sound effects for science fiction movies, man? You know, because as far as I... Yeah, okay. That's fine, you know.
Want to call him back?
No, I don't want you to call him back. But he'll probably call back. They always do. Where did I go wrong?
Well, I think you could have been a little bit kinder to the man. He's trying to make some very important points.
What kindness does he need to have from me? I said to him, I gave him all the rope he needed to hang himself with that asinine, what does Mitch McConnell's stare look like? And then comes, what did be...
I think they were saying that John Boehner's stare was more like that electrode. I don't know.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell was a theremin.
Yes, Mitch McConnell's stare was a theremin. John Boehner's stare is more of the vibrating electrode.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, geez, thanks very much. I appreciate that. Where did you get all that, man? From the Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, my God. What do you got? Emphysema? Where'd you get all that, man? From the... That's what you sounded like.
Okay, well, great. I'm sure the people appreciate that, Margaret, very, very much. Is he called back?
Yeah, he's right on the phone. You want to talk to him?
Not now. Everybody that hangs up on me calls back. They call back. What does he want?
What do you want? Yeah? Yeah?
We're on the air, bud.
Sorry. Mr. Henry wants to know what you want. You were the one that hung it up. No, you did. You hung it up.
Give me the phone. Vernon, Phil Henry, hi. What's going on, man? Because I said your wife needed to do sound effects in a science fiction movie, you thought I was being crude and rude? I never said anything about your wife melding with machines. I never said anything about your wife doing it with a machine. No, I did not. No, I did not. Huh? I never said a word about your wife having sex with a machine. I said she should do science fiction sound effects because she did the thing, what Margaret said, the electrode. I'm sorry, folks. Hold on. I'm on the air right now, and I'm doing a one-sided conversation with you. Okay?
All right. And I thought you were being very rude when you said that my wife should go ahead and give it up to a robot.
I never said anything of the sort.
He didn't say that at all, Vernon. He was simply commenting on her ability to sound like one.
Well, I thought that,
Put him on hold. Tell him right now. Right now.
Yeah, Vernon. We're on... No, this is not Phil. No, I'm not Phil. Oh, I know. Thank you. I know I sound like him. But
give me that, will you? Vernon, this is Phil. We're going to a commercial break. Vernon? No, I'm not Bud. Hang up on him.
Uh-oh, you hung it up on him.
Bud, the word is I hung up on him, and yes, I did.
Well, why? Because he thought you were Bud?
That and other things. We'll be back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And don't forget, tune in as well. We're, featuring all kinds of goodies there in the online store. By the way, if you get a year's subscription, we'll give you another year free. It's our Valentine's Month, special at philhenryshow.com. Right back.
Woo!
Famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and tune in. And coming up on Sunday, it is the Super Bowl, and it's going to be Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman. Bud, you getting ready for that?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty good, and Steve Bozell, too.
Right, well, he just said that, you know.
Yeah, well, that's all right. So Steve will be with us later on. We'll talk Super Bowl, Seattle Seahawks, and the Denver Broncos. I thought there was a very good interview with Richard Sherman. Chris Hayes had yesterday, and I was watching MSNBC, not because I'm necessarily a fan of MSNBC. I got no problem. I've given over to this reality. There isn't a so-called news channel anywhere that isn't politically slanted somehow. Fox and MSNBC are both sides of the same coin. They are without question, unabashedly biased. I don't know where Fox gets away with that whole fair and balanced. I don't think MSNBC actually makes pretends to be fair and balanced, do they?
Well, I've never heard MSNBC claim. MSNBC is very liberal. And the only good thing MSNBC ever did was they got rid of that big fat mouth on the Keith Olbermann. Oh, I didn't like him so very much. I hated him. I really hated him.
You shouldn't hate people.
Well, you know something? They say they hate Obama. And so it doesn't surprise me that you hate Keith Olbermann, too, General.
Well, I don't hate President Obama. Who told you that I hate President Obama?
Well, there's a lot of people that say they do hate President Obama.
Yeah, there's a lot, just like they said they hated George Bush. I mean, I can't fathom who these people are. I honestly don't. I don't think they're very good judges of character. I think anybody that says they hate a president, I would not trust their judgment when it comes to people. You know what I mean?
No, what do you mean?
I mean, that is not a very good judgment of a person. I mean, if to say that you hate a president, it's a very interesting statement. It's a very angry statement to make. I don't think it's a statement made by somebody that's really sizing somebody up. They just want to lash out and be angry. So I would not trust them if they said to you, for instance, hey, I know a guy who sells cars over here. You really ought to go see him because he's really honest. I wouldn't.
Oh, because they say they hate a president?
Well, yeah, because it's not a very accurate, intellectually solid statement to make. I think it's kind of an angry, emotional thing. Now, some people are very angry and emotional about the state of the country. We don't need that right now. You know, we just don't need that. All right, Vernon Dozier on the line with us here. Now, look at Vernon. I know that, you know, you got upset with me. I didn't mean for you to get upset with me. I'm trying to tell you how it is. But we've got a few minutes left here, and we do want to talk about the state of the, continue to talk about the State of the Union. Do you, you don't hate President Obama, do you?
No, I don't hate President Obama. The reason why I hung up on you, Phil, or you hung up on, I don't remember who hung, yeah, I hung up on you, is you were laughing at my wife for sounding like she just climbed out of a, I gotta say it, you were laughing at my wife like she was swinging her legs over the edge of the bed and lighting a cigarette, and there was a robot laying there going, like he had,
That's asinine. I never said anything of the sort.
Why are you saying that, Vernon?
Why am I saying what?
Why are you making something up so ridiculous?
I heard Mr. Didn't you say that?
I said your wife ought to do sound effects in a science fiction movie. I never said anything about her swinging her legs over the side of the bed, lighting a cigarette, while a robot lays there going, huh.
I'm detecting in your voice mockery and...
Vernon, this is General Shaw. Mr. Henry didn't use any such verbiage or any intent. Now, if you say that Mr. Henry's statement that your wife should be doing sound effects in a science fiction movie, and you think that means that she should be giving it up to everything with four legs and a computer for a brain, well, then, mister, you need some marriage counseling. Because...
Wait. Can I talk to Mr. Henry and not this...
And not this what?
I didn't mean anything, sir, but it's starting to fracture. What you're saying is fracturing and going places. It's going places I don't want to go.
General, he's not saying give it up. I wasn't saying give it up to everything with two legs and a computer for a brain. We're getting way off the beaten path.
But if you talk about having sex with a robot, that's essentially what it is.
Nobody's asking you either, bud. All right.
Well, then what are you saying about my wife?
I said what I said. She should be doing sound effects for science fiction movies.
And you didn't say anything about her getting passed around by some, by that Robbie, that guy from the Lost in Space. You mentioned four of those Robbies from Lost in Space passing my wife around a campfire? Mister?
I think you need to lie down and get yourself a nap because you sound like a babbling idiot.
Oh, is that right? Well, let me tell you who the babbling idiot is. I'm looking at Ed Schultz right now. This guy's a waste of space. Ed Schultz is a waste of space. I knew Ed Schultz when he was in school. He played linebacker. And he hit me pretty good.
You played football against Ed Schultz?
I played football against a guy that looked like him. I'm pretty sure it was him.
Where'd you play football?
I played football in Texas.
I thought Ed Schultz was from North Dakota.
Well, maybe you thought wrong. But I played football against a guy that looked like Ed Schultz, and he hit me. I was coming through the line. It was a fullback reverse. I was going the opposite direction of where the play went. It was supposed to go to the running back, and here comes this Ed Schultz through the line. He hit me a lick, and I'll never forget it. I fell on my back. I stared up at the sky. I saw five, six different colors. I looked up, and I saw Schultz's ugly face through that mask, and I said, boy, I tell you, Schultz, I'll follow you to the ends of the earth. Follow you to the ends of the earth.
You gotta marry him.
Did I just hear what I thought I heard?
I'm sorry. Yeah, just keep your mouth shut or you're getting kicked out.
Did I just hear what I thought I heard?
He said he's sorry.
Never mind. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks a lot, bud. Keep your mouth shut. Even if you think it's the funniest thing you've got to say in the history of the world, keep your mouth shut from now on. Do you understand?
I plan to tell him that, Mr. Simmons.
Vernon's on the phone again.
I don't want to talk to him.
He doesn't want to talk to you. He doesn't want to talk to you. No, not because I said for you to marry that guy. You said, Mr. Henry said that your wife should have sex with Robbie the robot and four other guys look like him pass around a campfire.
Give me the phone, will you? Vernon, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Am I on the air?
Yeah, you're on the air. I want no more of this. I'll give you two more minutes. And I don't want to hear about President Bush with his olive oil, President Obama with his olive oil voice and his guinea charm.
Look, Phil, that's I was in the movie The Godfather. I was simply saying that President Obama liked Johnny Fontaine. There's no difference between President Obama and Johnny Fontaine. There's no difference at all. Yes, skin color. One is an African-American, the other Italian-American. But both of these guys, with their olive oil voices and their Guinea charm.
There's no Guinea charm with President Obama because he's not Italian, for God's sake.
All right, okay, fine. But I'm using it figuratively, all right? Can I just use it figuratively?
Don't use it at all.
Why not?
Do that, okay? She keeps thinking now that I want that. I'm saying...
Who?
My wife. I don't need it anymore, Kimberly. I don't need it anymore. I'm saying that President Obama, through his charm, through his style and grace, he had Mitch McConnell staring with the bulkhead stare. He had Boehner looking like he wanted to lick his hand. He had Boehner ready to go... And go.
All right, thank you.
I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn anymore.
All right, thank you very much. More on the president's State of the Union address, certainly, and more on other news here in the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Steve Bozell will be back with tonight with our Super Bowl talk. What is this? This is that depressing vampire song?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back. Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. Jeez. Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and tune in. And everywhere else that you can hear this thing, you can hear it on our website, live stream of the Phil Henry Show on our website, philhenryshow.com. Steve Bozell going to be with us here this hour to talk about the Super Bowl. Thank you very much, Vernon Dozier, for joining us. I'm sorry that there was a misunderstanding there with his wife, Kimberly, but that's kind of the way it goes on our show.
Well, you know, I don't think you did anything wrong. If anything, I think Vernon's a little bent.
Wipes it up.
Well, I don't think you have your wife doing sound effects. I thought it was very unclear.
Yes, having your wife come in and giving the sound effect for a man's stare, I think the audience, it was lost on the audience.
It was weird, yeah, it was weird. But, I mean, the point that he was trying to make, which I understood perfectly well without his wife coming in and going, ooh, whatever it was she was doing.
No, it's good. She's doing a science fiction.
Yeah, I know, bud. She was doing the science fiction sound effect, you mean?
Yeah, she was going, ooh.
Oh, baby. Bud, you don't do that good at all. You don't do that good at all. You don't do that good at all.
Okay, we got that, General.
It was very bad what you just did.
You do better?
Could I what?
Can you do better?
You want to try and do better, General?
I could go better than I could go, ooh, ooh, ooh. Is that it?
No, General, that's not. Bud did it better than you.
Okay, well, that's great. Now that we know who does it better. And the other thing that I think happens to a lot of guys where they get a little touchy about the wife, I didn't say anything about his wife having sex with a robot. That was not... You know.
Well, ever since you had the conversation about clickers and the humanoids and the idea of relations, carnal or otherwise, with a clicker, if you will, or a humanoid.
And what is a clicker?
Well, it's not considered very polite.
It's a word from a movie. Are you guys nuts or something? It's an old movie. It's a 1962 movie. Okay. And we were touting it. And clicker is, in the film, the word clicker is quite obviously... an allegory to the N-word in contemporary society. What they were doing is they were painting the picture of a futuristic society where robots are used to do the bidding of humans, and humans are even having sex with them. This one guy's sister is living with one.
And they call that being in rapport, correct?
What? Being in rapport, but it's
called, yeah, being in rapport, and the one guy, Cragen, who is with the...
I'm not trying to be a smartass. You said Cragen.
Yeah, that was the name of the guy, Cragen.
So is he supposedly the descendant of the auto parts people, or is that...
I don't think so, no.
No, that's no such... No. When the movie was made, I don't think Cragen Auto Parts even existed.
But he could be the descendant of those people.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, fine.
Well, why are you giving me that look, Phil?
Okay, so maybe they had a guy named Rockefeller, too, and they were all descendants. I don't know, you know. In any event, this guy, Cragen, or Crager, or whatever the hell his name was...
Bud, I'm not kidding. I thought it was Crevice, but I know it's not.
No, it wasn't Crevice, bud. You just like getting that word in. just like butt cheek, like Beavis said in the Beavis and Butthead movie. You remember that? Never mind. So this order of flesh and blood, these cats don't like the clickers, as they call them, and so they go around trying to kick the crap out of the clickers and beat them up and drag them out of bedrooms. I mean, it makes me laugh thinking that the order of flesh and... Why isn't anybody laughing?
I don't know. I'm just...
Phil, you're worrying us.
I look up and everybody's staring at me like I got a disease or something. I'm telling you, it's funny. Anyway, you ask me a question, I'm giving you the answer.
All right.
So Steve Bozell comes on here this hour to discuss with us the Super Bowl. And Bud Dickman and Steve Bozell will be giving you our exclusive Phil Hendry Show commentary of the Super Bowl. Join the guys at game time. I don't know when the game is. We can look it up. I did have the NFL up online here a moment ago. Maybe, Bud, you can double check. I do know that the Puppy Bowl is at 3. And the reason why I bring up the Puppy Bowl is I know that Steve has got a real problem with that. He thinks that the Puppy Bowl, having the guts, having the sheer audacity to go up against the Super Bowl, is a real low-life move. He thinks it's a real degenerate move.
Why would it be degenerate to have the cute little puppies on?
Because he thinks that it's rude for the Puppy Bowl to think they're going to compete with the... See, a few of us like both. I like the Super Bowl. I also want to see the Puppy Bowl. Why am I not allowed to enjoy, without any prejudice, both games?
Well, Phil, you'll have to make a decision. It's either football or the Puppy Bowl, I guess.
Yeah, see, and I think that that's wrong. The Super Bowl kicks off at 3:30. Is that right, Bud?
Yeah, 3:30 Pacific time. Or maybe Eastern.
No, it's got to be 3:30 Pacific. Got to be 3:30. It's got to be 6:30 Eastern, because they want the prime time thing. They want to have the whole day build up. You know, they want to get the top. They want to get the top audience for the dollar. The Puppy Bowl rolls at 3, so, you know.
But I don't know why everybody's talking about the Puppy Bowl. I mean, the only people watch the Puppy Bowl besides you, Mr. Everett, are women. You know.
No, there's guys that watch it, too. What are you, nuts or something? There's guys that watch it because their wives and girlfriends want them to watch it. The only people are women.
Well, I'm not watching any Puppy Bowl. My wife will not get me to watch a Puppy Bowl, and that's all there is to it. That's final. I'll watch the football game, or I'll take a nap, or I'll go out and walk, or I'll just throw bread at ducks. Generally, what I do on a Sunday afternoon is toss bread at a duck.
You toss bread at ducks?
Yes. I go down to... West Lake, or one of the beautiful lakes that we have here, and I'll toss bread at a duck absentmindedly and smile at little children. It makes a few people nervous, but...
Well, you shouldn't. Are you there by yourself?
Yes. So this year I'm taking my daughter and my wife with me, so I don't look like that much of a creep, but...
Well, I don't think that's right that you're looked at as a... You see, you're tossing...
Well, I'm tossing bread at ducks, and I smile at little kids, and that's what... That tore it. So now I'm going to bring my wife so no one thinks I'm some kind of a low-life creep.
So here we have a retired United States Army general who can't even go out and toss bread at a duck without someone thinking he's a low-life creep.
Yeah, because you smile at a little tiny kid with a drool.
It's not drool. It's just that foam collects at the edge of my mouth.
Why?
I don't know. It's unconscious.
Well, that's going to do it, General. I mean, I'm sure you've figured that out.
Well, yes, I figured it out. They said, look, old man, if you wouldn't mind, just move on. And I said, why? And they said, because you've got foam at the corner of your mouth, you just bother us.
Do you? Okay.
Don't look. I'm not a pervert because I happen to have excess saliva.
No, you're not a pervert. I just wondered why that would happen.
Yeah, you will.
Don't say it, Dickman, because it'll be the last thing that you ever... It'll be what you leave mankind. There'll be nothing after that.
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to take our break. We'll have Steve Bozell coming up here as we discuss the Super Bowl and what's in store or not, as the case may be, coming up on Sunday. And we will have the commentary for you, Phil Hendry Show commentary here on The Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com on Phil TV. Phil TV. Until then, stick around. Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman next on the Broncos and the Seahawks. Hello, Phil Hendry Show. There we go.
Oh, I love this. This is Lou Graham, and that was yesterday.
Oh, man. All right, anyway, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and it is philhendryshow.com. Steve Bozell on the phone with us. And we're going to talk about the Supper Bowl, man. I'm kidding. I don't mean Supper Bowl. The Super Bowl. And, of course, the Super Bowl with all of the attendant drama and all of the marvelous dramatics. Not just the game itself, but it's always some other thing that's going on. And, Steve, you've got news of that other thing?
Well, Phil, you know, I think I told Bud about this, that the NFL is going to block mobile video streaming at the Super Bowl.
They're going to block mobile video streaming at the NFL at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, at the Super Bowl game. And the stadiums, you know, have boosted cellular and Wi-Fi in recent times, but Super Bowl between the Broncos and Seahawks is going to be streamed by NFL.com and Fox Sports, but both of those sources will be blocked on the Wi-Fi and the cellular network at the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, according to Michelle McKenna Doyle, who is the NFL CIO, in a phone interview to NFL.com and Fox Sports. Blocks will be implemented both for mobile apps and for the web browser. Now, the decision stems from last year's Super Bowl when streaming was initially allowed but eventually blocked when it took up too much bandwidth. According to Hershey, we blocked it last year, but we did it on the fly. We started having some challenges. This year we plan just to go ahead and we're going to block, and you can't do nothing about it, you know. He said that...
What they got to do that for?
Because they don't have no bandwidth. You know,
well, they're saying because the bandwidth, I wonder if it's to ensure the exclusivity of both the NFL Network and Fox Sports.
I don't know what any of that means.
What I'm saying is that they give the rights to the video. They give the rights to the game to Fox Sports, to the NFL Network, obviously, and to whoever it is that has the legal rights to the game. People sitting in the stadium and streaming this for their cell phones and delivering it to people outside the stadium may not be exactly what they want.
That makes a lot of sense to me, because it sounds as if the NFL is claiming they simply don't have the infrastructure, and I think that might be a little disingenuous.
Well, again, I don't know any of what that means.
Well, what? Why don't you understand what that means?
Because I don't know what it means.
It doesn't matter. Go ahead and read.
Well, what I've got here is the NFL is providing a Super Bowl app to attendees with an event guide and exclusive content, but it won't include streaming video or replays. While we do know that people will like to look at replays on their phone, and there are some people who like to stream certain amounts of video in the game, the vast majority of our fans want to watch the game on the field, watch the replays on the jumbo, and participate in the event more than they want to be checking their phone. And so while we could have made some of that available, it might have impacted the ability of the majority of the fans to be able to stay connected to the social media, Facebook, and that kind of thing.
Well, right there. She says most people want to watch the game. Well, if most people want to watch the game, then why are they needing to block the streaming because there isn't enough bandwidth? I don't understand that. I think it's simply a way of protecting the agreements they have in place with people who are allowed to make this content available. I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, whatever. And there you go. But if most people want to watch the game, but they don't have enough bandwidth for everybody to be using their phones.
Well, maybe a lot of people like to do the Twitter and they want to talk and say everything.
I never understood on Twitter why they want to do that.
I'm sorry?
I never understood why they want to do a Twitter.
Well, I mean, if you're at the Super Bowl and you want to tweet it out, yeah, think about it. Just slow down, sit down, and just think. Just give it some good hard thought, and I'm sure you'll agree that after you think about it, you'll agree that you're going to sit down at the Super Bowl, and you're going to sit down and think about just exactly where you are. And I'm sure you would agree then, you know, if you just...
Yeah, we got that you've already thought about it, and you're going to agree to what?
Well, you'll agree that you're at a very big event, and you're going to want to tweet it out. Okay.
Yeah, I know they want to tweet it out, but are they constantly, what are they tweeting out?
That they're at the Super Bowl. They're telling people, look where I am, and look at how cool it is. Look at this, man. I don't go to no Super Bowl every day. They don't have no Super Bowl every day.
No, they don't have the Super Bowl every day, and I think you're right. And people, obviously, who are at the game want to let everybody that they know it, and they do want to send some photographs. And I think they're not talking about pictures, right, Steve?
Uh, I don't think. Or they say streaming video. Is that the same as taking a picture?
No, that's not the same. So you can take individual photographs while you're sitting in the stands.
That's what I'm hearing.
I would say that's correct, yeah.
Well, Steve, this is General Shaw. You don't understand what streaming video is?
Yeah, no, yes, I do, but I just don't know all the things that the rest of you were saying about it.
Well, here is the point. If you can take still photographs, which it sounds like you can, then you'll be able to send those or tweet those or whatever you call it. It's the video. Is that right, Phil?
Yeah, it's the streaming video. That does take a lot of bandwidth. It takes a lot of everything. It takes a lot of battery. It takes, I mean, you better be bringing with you a pretty significant battery pack to the ball game to be able to use your cell phone for any length of time, because that sucker's going to be out of juice, man, by the half, you know, by halftime. So taking those still pictures, fantastic. Tweeting, fantastic. I don't think anybody is saying anything here against any of that. They're simply saying as far as the streaming of video goes, you can't do it.
We'll be there, and we won't be there, and we're the first, we're the first commentators of the Super Bowl to ever say, join us, we won't be there, and I wanted to make a big thing out of that, but Dickman said it was lame. You know?
But I just didn't think it was a big deal.
And I wanted to say, join us, won't you? We won't be there. I'm Steve Bozell, and he's Bud Dickman, and we're not going to be there, so please be with us when we won't be there.
Yeah, it's fine. It's okay.
Well, I'm getting the picture. It sucks, you know.
I didn't say it sucks.
Well, I'll tell you, you need to concentrate more on the game. You and Dickman, if I could make a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, General.
Well, you sound a little resentful.
Well, you're a general. I'm not allowed to say.
What's wrong?
I'm not allowed to say I don't want to hear from the guy.
Well, I won't say anything if you don't want me to say anything. I was going to say that when Dickman cut that fart and you made a big deal out of it, that was ridiculous. You should have kept your mouth shut, but I won't say anything about it.
Okay, you didn't say anything about it. Thank you. Wow.
What fart are we talking about, okay?
Yeah, Dickman, you know. It was a couple of weeks. It was before the season ended, and it was, I think, a Philly game or a Dallas.
We were eating Fritos. Yeah, we ate Fritos. We ate barbecue Fritos.
Yeah, and he let one go, and I went, I couldn't help it. I had to say something about it.
Well, to me, that was a distracting and juvenile thing, and completely poisoned the atmosphere for me. I was enjoying the game until Dickman farted.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Well, not because I couldn't smell it. I'm talking about you.
Why do you blame me for that?
Okay, let me jump in here. Steve, it's ordinarily the case in a broadcast, no matter what is going on, from a personal standpoint, you don't mention it. You don't say anything about it. You let the fans enjoy the game. You let the fans or the listeners or the viewers enjoy why they came to the radio or the television to watch this event, to hear you describe it, to be a part of something other than whether Dickman farted or you have a problem or anything, you know?
I understand that, Mr. Hendry, and I know that that's what the way the professional is supposed to be. But you had to have been there. It was bad. It was bad.
Okay, so it was bad. You still got to be a professional about it.
Oh, yeah, listen to you. God, man.
All right. So it'll be Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman on Sunday for the Super Bowl. It's the Denver Broncos, the Seattle Seahawks. Steve, who do you like?
Well, I think at first blush you want to go with Peyton Manning and you want to go with the Denver Broncos because there's a certain amount of destiny there. There's a certain amount of experience. I think that... I do admire Peyton Manning, but the other thing is that Peyton Manning's thrown some pretty devastating interceptions in big games. He did it last year, did it the year before, did it in the Super Bowl, against the New Orleans Saints. Is he going to do it again? I don't know. You're facing a pretty good pass rush the Seattle Seahawks have got. I'm going to go with the Seahawks in this one.
Bud, what do you think?
Well, I was going to go with the Seahawks, but he's copying me.
I'm not copying you, man. Go ahead and give your analysis, man, if you want to go with the Seahawks.
I was going to give the same analysis.
And what was that?
I think that Peyton Manning is going to be that he's not good.
I didn't say that, man. What I say specifically.
What?
What did I say specifically?
Specifically? You sound like the fat man that was at the Casey Anthony trial.
Will you guys just get this thing said?
I think...
What fat man?
You sound like that guy, the...
Come on. We're burning daylight.
I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos because I believe in Peyton Manning. I think he's learned from his mistakes. Just because Bozell's going with the Seahawks.
Oh, great, man. Now you're going to lose for sure. You're going against me just because you don't like what I'm saying, so you're going to go with a team that you don't believe in.
I believe in a Denver Bronco.
No, you don't. You just said that you...
All right, so you're taking Seattle, and, Bud, you're just going with Denver because you don't want to join Steve in his pick.
No, I don't. Not especially after he said I cut one.
Well, you did, man, so...
All right, Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman, thanks so much. We'll see you guys on Sunday for the game. It'll be on Phil TV in HD. Our commentary of that with Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman beginning at game time at 3:30. Thanks a lot, Steve. All right, we'll be coming back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show a little bit more commentary on the president's State of the Union address. And there was a young man there in the State of the Union address, a young man sitting with Mrs. Obama, the First Lady. And he obviously had suffered some grievous wound. He was wearing an Army uniform, so I'm making the further assumption that he suffered this wound in combat. And what was his name, General?
Well, you're talking about the young man, Corey Remsburg.
That's it, yeah.
Corey Remsburg was introduced. He was an Army Ranger. And met the president on Omaha Beach in France in 2009 during a 65th anniversary celebration. And quite the young man. We can give you a little more information if you want during the break.
I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it on the air because it's not fodder for a radio show. It's I would just recommend that people go and read up on Corey and read his story. And that was, if you were wondering, that was the young man that was there in the gallery there with Mrs. Obama during the president's speech. All right, world famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. And don't forget that with the TuneIn app, you can listen to our show live 7 to 10 on the Pacific Coast, man. So in other words, if you are, of a mind to listen to the show live and not on demand, you can hear it on TuneIn. Go to the Phil Hendry channel on TuneIn at 7 o'clock Pacific and hear the show. Be right back.
Ted of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Welcome on down. This is Ted from Ted's of Beverly Hills. I want to talk about the Obama State of the Union address and Al Sharpton, who I like, but he's bothering me.
Here I I'd like to say something.
No.
Hold on, everybody. Just hold the phone here. I don't want to hear any kind of an argument. Ted Bell is joining us. You know, Margaret, I said that Ted could come on, and he could make a couple of comments. You can make your statement, too.
Because Al Sharpton made a comment today that I thought was very accurate. And, Ted, you are going to go on and say it isn't true.
No, I'm not going to say it isn't true. Why do I have to deal with her? I was told I'd be able to make these statements.
You're dealing with me because I believe in truth.
I believe in truth, too. He said that Ronald Reagan used 213 executive orders in his first term, and it's true, yes, he did, but he's Ronald Reagan. Barack Obama using 147 executive actions in his first term is Barack Obama. Is there a difference? A little bit, you know.
And that's racist, too.
Oh, God.
You know, you're not really acquitting yourself very well, Ted, for a guy who owns a restaurant who is actually sponsoring this segment.
Why do you say that?
Because you're going, oh!
Yeah, you sound like a woman when you did that.
Is that right? Did I sound like a woman? Do you want to know what a little girl sounds like? When I get over to the studio tonight and I get out of my car and I'm,
Okay, this is why when we have these conversations regarding politics with some of the more polarized people on our panel, it never works out all right. Now, Ted wants to make this statement. You heard Al Sharpton say what?
Al Sharpton on that TV show, if you can call it that, that he does on MCBBBB, whatever the hell the name of that thing is.
It's MSNBC, you know full well, Ted.
All right, MSNBC. He said that Ronald Reagan was an imperial president because they were talking about Obama and Mark Levin, who I think is a wonderful... I like Mark Levin, and Mark Levin paid you a compliment, Phil. at the Talkers convention in New York a number of years ago.
Yeah, well, we were talking out on the street. It was a professional conversation.
All right. What do you think of him?
I think Mark is a nice guy. I politically, I don't agree with him. I'm not going to get into a discussion. What did he say?
Mark Levin said it's a coup, that Obama is operating this government like it's a coup.
Oh, my God. That is the stupidest thing, and I would expect it of Mark Levin. When he talks about these executive orders, Barack Obama has used 147.
Oh, yeah. Here we go again with this lie.
Well, why do you call it a lie? Why do you say that's a lie? I mean, that's a number that can be looked up pretty easy. 147 executive decisions. Ronald Reagan, how many?
213. Excuse me, 213, Ted. Read it and weep.
Read it and weep. Oh, well. Read it and weep. So, 213.
Are you saying that that number is not right?
I'm saying the number is right, but I'm saying that the number is right for a guy whose name was Ronald Reagan, okay? Ronald Reagan, and it wasn't Barack Obama, and I think there's a difference.
All right, well, the difference is in your mind that Ronald Reagan is just all that. Ronald Reagan is a legend, and Barack Obama isn't. Even if I agreed with you, Ted, it still doesn't matter. The man used far more executive decisions.
All right, well, I think what Ted's saying, though, is, if I may, Ted.
Go ahead.
Is that Ronald Reagan is you judge him from a different standard. Ronald Reagan was dealing with a Congress that was so bad.
And Obama is not. You're saying this Congress is a good one.
I think this is a very responsible Congress.
Well, now hold on, because now what we have here is completely just opposing points of view. You say this Congress is responsible, but the Congress that Ronald... You say this Congress is a responsible one, but the Congress that Ronald Reagan was dealing with wasn't, and that's because of your political ideology. So for you to say that Ronald Reagan used those executive decisions and those executive orders far more intelligently and judiciously is simply a matter of opinion based upon your ideology.
Well, you know what? And that's the way it comes down. But I'm not going to have anybody say that you compare Barack Obama. You don't compare Barack Obama to Ronald Reagan. You don't do that. You know, oftentimes I say on the radio show that I'm a volcano surrounded by ants. And that's how I feel. I heard Dr. Ron Turner say that. And I think Ronald Reagan could say the same thing as a president. He's a volcano surrounded by ants. He is the volcano president, and all the other presidents were ants.
Well, that's an asinine thing to say.
Well, I think in some ways it's very true.
Well, because of your ideological slant, Ted, you can't see this very fairly, and so you're going to say all of these demeaning things about a president. But the numbers don't lie.
The numbers don't lie, but the numbers do lie if you don't take into consideration the guy that the numbers ain't lying about.
Ronald Reagan had every right to use his 213 executive decisions, but Barack Obama did not have the right to use his 147.
I'm not saying Barack Obama doesn't have the right to use some of those. But I am saying that if you take Reagan 213 executive decisions, it's just good. It's just good.
Well, thanks a lot for your very unbiased and objective and clear-eyed appraisal of those two presidencies.
I know that it doesn't sound fair, and I know that I don't sound like I am being clear-eyed and objective. I know it sounds like I'm just like that puppy dog you said that Boehner was, or somebody that they said Boehner was with Obama, like going, waiting at the bull. Well, if that's the way I sound about Ronald Reagan, forgive me. But that's how much I admired the man.
Yes, but you cannot have an objective conversation about it.
All right, so I'm not having an objective. If I'm sitting there going, and there's a bowl of water.
Yeah, but you do that pretty good.
I beg your pardon?
I said you do that pretty good, going all...
What the hell was that, man? Is that a human? Is that that guy you got working for you?
What is the point here, Ted? You're saying that you are very much enamored of the dog of Ronald Reagan.
I didn't say it. What did you say? I didn't say anything about being someone's dog.
Yeah, you did. You're sitting there going like that.
I didn't go I said, you make me sound like that guy Blacktooth on that Soupy Sales show. I said that I admire the man.
Yeah, but you said that because of Boehner going, forget it.
Would you idiots learn how to do a dog sound effect?
Yeah, you're going, I didn't say that at all. I went, that's how a dog sounds. He doesn't sound, the way you do it, you make it sound like it's a dog that's got Well, you know, a dog that's choking on something, if you'll pardon the expression.
All right, I'm back. I went to the bathroom. I got cottage cheese. I got a vanilla wafer. I even took one of your cigars, Margaret. Forgive me. Hoping against hope that this conversation would be over, and it's still going on.
Yeah, well, I love the general, too.
Well, I'm sorry, General, but I feel I have the right to say what I say. I know that you admired Ronald Reagan.
I admired Ronald Reagan very much. I thought he was a great president. But I think you, Ted, talking about being Ronald Reagan's dog and saying that Boehner was Obama's dog, I think you're doing a great disservice to a great president. And the dog, and you people with the dog...
What?
You're doing dog breath.
No, we were trying to...
No, I know what you were trying to do.
Did you hear him, General? They're going, I said that Boehner...
I heard what you said. And while you might have approximated the sound of a dog better than Mr. Henry or Mr. Dykman here, or Dickman, all three of you really sound like you ought to be handcuffed to the short bus with a bicycle helmet on each of you, a hot dog in one hand, and the wiener in the other.
Oh, man, did you hear what he just said?
No, he's talking about the hot dog wiener.
No. Are you going to step in, Henry?
Thanks a lot, Ted.
Are you stepping in?
All right. Thank you very much. That's, of all the conversations we've had on this program, that one went nowhere faster than any other. And that whole comment, General, about the hot dog and the wiener.
Well, what was wrong with it?
That's very, very unkind.
General, we've had a lot of comments on this program about mentally deficient people. We don't need you adding to the pain.
Well, is that the cottage cheese you guys got?
Yeah.
Well, why is it on a plate?
We couldn't find any clean bowls.
What is it with you guys and cottage cheese? You know, you're gonna weigh 800 pounds, bud.
Uh-uh, cottage cheese good for you.
It's good for you, yes, but it's loaded with fat, man. It's fat. What?
But it's supposed to be fat-free.
If it says fat-free, it's fat-free. Does it say fat-free?
No.
Then it ain't fat-free, man.
Cottage cheese got to say it's fat-free.
Cottage cheese is not fat-free unless it says it. Just because it's cottage cheese doesn't mean it's fat-free.
Did you get fat-free cottage cheese?
I already asked him that. He said no.
Uh-uh. So you're saying a guy's gonna waddle on out of here on a cottage cheese?
You could be waddling out, yes. Cottage cheese can make you fat. Don't worry about it. All right, the Phil Henry Show here and philhenryshow.com. Our online store is open for all of your needs, whether they're ball caps, whether they are sweatshirts, whether they are T-shirts, whether they are CDs, whether they are keychains, whether they are shot glasses, whether they're anything. Go to the Phil Henry online store at philhenryshow.com and pick up something. Valentine's Day is right around the corner, and that reminds us, of course, to tell you about a special that we're offering on our website, and I think it's kind of cool, and that is a free year of backstage pass access, and that's a full access free year from the Phil Henry Show if you purchase a subscription. So if you buy a year of backstage pass access, you get another year completely free. That's right, and we're doing this through Valentine's Day. So all annual backstage pass signups in between today and February the 15th,
That's a day after.
I understand. Today and February the 15th, we'll get a free gift subscription for 1 year of backstage pass access. So why not give yourself a little something this Valentine's Day and then give the other year to someone you love? Buy yourself a backstage pass and get a free backstage pass for a year for your Valentine. It's available at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. So a little something that we like to every now and again roll out for our friends and neighbors. We'll be back on the Phil Henry Show in just a moment. Show, philhenryshow.com. Yes. With the Super Bowl coming up here on Phil TV on Sunday, not the game, but our commentary, and I say our commentary, Bud Dickman and Steve Bozell. All right. What the hell's going on here, man? I'm trying to get stuff printed off.
Yeah, things are wrong.
Well, then fix it, man. This blat, I wanted to say bloody and blasted, and it came out blatty.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
It's weird, all right. I wanted to print off one story about, see, here's what I want to read to folks, this story of Corey Remsburg. We also have the White House tech titans. See, one of the things that most people don't care about, this will come as a shock, but it's absolute stone-cold truth. One of the things that the rank and file of Americans don't care about is the NSA story. You want me to repeat it? I'll repeat it. They don't. Now, yes, people who live, breathe, eat, and crap politics and Obama hate or Obama love or Obama do or Obama don't, those people, yeah, they live, breathe, eat, and crap this stuff, and they're hanging on every single damn word that comes out of the NSA and this jackass Snowden and the rest of them. And rightfully so, people gave me a whole bunch of crap the other night for calling him Eric and not Edward. I don't know. I don't care. I do, out of respect for my listeners, though, use the proper name, Eric. I'm joking, Edward, I know. All right. However, we thought we would pull, if you'll pardon the expression, the story on the White House tech titans reaching an agreement on surveillance disclosures. The Obama administration has reached an agreement with a group of technology companies on disclosing requests for customer data in the cloud. But the agreement, and by cloud, you know, that's the cloud where you keep all of your reserve of things. It's not on the hardware. It's not on the phone. It's not on the computer. It's in the cloud.
And the cloud is
digital memory stored elsewhere other than your component. It's stored with Apple, in the case of my iPhone, in Apple's large memory bank. I guess I probably sound pretty stupid, don't I?
Well, I think you do, because there you go.
No, it is the storage facility. It is where data is stored. It could be Apple's company. It might be another one that they contract with. I doubt it. It's probably something that they own. The companies, including Facebook, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Yahoo, will now be allowed to publish information about the number of foreign intelligence surveillance court orders they receive for customer data. They'll also be able to reveal more about national security letters, NSLs, the secrecy of which was weakened by the USA Patriot Improvement and Reauthorization Act in 2006. Which was not secret, which was voted on publicly by the Congress, which was signed into law publicly by a president, which was re-endorsed by another president. There's nothing secret going on here, folks. The only thing that probably was a secret to the American people was just how thick they were when it came to a lot of this stuff. If that makes people feel bad, if it makes people feel offended, if they think I'm a bad guy for saying it, I'm sorry, but that's the facts, Jack. Unlike Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA warrants, NSLs can only request metadata such as phone numbers, dialed or email addresses communicated with. That is an NSL as opposed to the warrant that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act would issue. Since NSA leaker Edward Snowden revealed the PRISM program, which gives the NSA and the FBI access to data of cloud providers' customers under a sweeping FISA warrant technology, companies have pressed the government for permission to share more information about disclosures in an attempt to reassure customers about their privacy. Do you understand that nothing here is saying that they cannot ask for this data? Nothing here is saying that they don't have access to the data. What they're talking about is letting you and I know when the data is being requested. That's, you know, I wish people understood that a little bit better as to what's going on. Nothing has changed other than the fact that you will now know that the NSA is making all of these requests for data. Now, the really active users and the really, very passionate and active online users of Facebook and other, whether they're social media sites or any other site, while those people will be very, very aware of that, and then
that's it. You know, I'm leaving Facebook. I don't know if anybody cares. I'm leaving now because the NSA has requested all this stuff, and I don't know about you people. You're idiots. I know, you know how this stuff plays out, and no one cares. Nobody cares. No one's interested at all. You go ahead, you leave Facebook because they don't give a damn, man.
You know, people quit Facebook and Twitter all the time thinking that they've made a big statement and everyone's going to follow them out of there, and people forget about them within 5 seconds. They don't give a crap. As far as the NSA or any other security agency requesting information from Facebook or Google, you don't know whether it's about you. You will know, at least according to this agreement, you will know more about how often they're requesting this information. You won't know whether it's about you. You won't know whether it's about your friends. You'll just know that there have been a certain number of warrants, as they call them, or requests, as they call them, for this information. But request it, they will. Get it, they will. Read it, share it. It's all good, man. You know, that's the Patriot Act. In other words, in theory, if Google got 150 FISA orders, again, FISA is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court order, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court order, if they got 150 and 200 national security letters, which are requests for email addresses dialed or phone numbers dialed or email addresses communicated with, the company could reveal that it had received over 250 requests from the government. Or the company could optionally say that it had received under 1,000 FISA orders and under 1,000 NSLs. That's as specific as they're going to get. The agreement led Microsoft, Google, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Yahoo to drop their lawsuits against the government over disclosure rights. We filed our lawsuits because we believe that the public has a right to know about the volume and type of national security requests we received, the company said in a joint statement. We're pleased the Department of Justice has agreed that we and other providers can disclose the information. Well, you're disclosing it in a very vague way, in a very general way, and that's cool, you know, but you're going to have people bitching and bellyaching and saying that you're working hand-in-hand with the government, and on and on and on it goes.
So they can still request this information?
Yeah, they're going to still request the information. There's nothing saying that they can't request the information. Of course they're going to still request it. And here's the big thing. You're going to be able, you're going to know that they have requested it to the tune of over 250 or under 1,000. There, that's all you need to know there, Mr. and Mrs. America. Okay? So Edward Snowden is sitting on his ass in Moscow right now, eating all that real thin soup and braving the winter winds and sitting down with some bad breath general in a fur hat and toasting with vodka as he says, "Good to have you here." And he's going through all of that so that now you know over 250 but under 1,000 requests have been made for your information from the NSA. And I'm not saying that I mind that at all. I think it's pretty funny. I'm laughing my ass off if you really want to know the honest truth. I am. I'm laughing my ass off at the fact that this guy, tried to be a big hero, and what he got was, you know, run out of... He's out in Russia right now, sitting on his dead ass. For what, man? He's still going to get your information. Just, you know, now it's just... they let you know whether it's over 250 requests or under 1,000. Phil Henry Show, be right back. If I stay too long, you people try to pull me down. They talk about me like a dog. Talk about the clothes I wear. Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com, and tune in. And welcome back here, the final hour of this Tuesday night show. Thanks again to all of the good people that we visit with on occasion on Facebook. Our Facebook fan page is facebook.com/philhenryfans, P-H-A-N-S. Our Facebook, our regular friend page, which is
What are you trying to say?
I don't mess around with that anymore, man. I do, but it's like, whatever. Facebook is such a bizarre and baffling experience anyway. It really is. It's, but you got to be there. If you have the kind of, if you do the kind of work I do, you have to be on social media. More and more companies are using social media. More and more companies are using it as an advertising platform. That's why they call Facebook not so much a social media site now as it is infrastructure. It's a part of what is needed by companies to or entities to promote. But the Facebook fan page is a bizarre and very strange experience. And you've got so many different and varied kinds of people over on Facebook. One of the things that's been interesting for me...
Well, tell everyone about this Bill Gates letter, because this has gotten out of control.
Well, no, it's not out of control at all. It's not out of control.
Yeah, it is. That one guy said, "Why kick your ass?"
That's, well, like, that's unusual? You got to be kidding me.
Who said they were going to do what?
Some guy said they're going to kick Phil Henry's ass on account of the $5,000.
What $5,000?
Hold on for a minute. About 3 years ago, some guy photoshopped a sign into a picture of Bill Gates. Bill Gates was holding something, and a guy photoshopped instead a sign that said, "Hi, I'm Bill Gates, and if you share this photograph, I'll give you $5,000. I'm Bill Gates, as you know, I'm rich," something like that.
Yes, and that's been going on.
Whoa, hold on. So I discovered this picture, I guess, about a month or so ago, and I thought it was really funny. So I shared it and started the whole thing going all over again. And then I photoshopped something myself where it said, "Hi, I'm Bill Gates. Don't believe the people that are telling you this is fake. It's true. I will give you $5,000 if you simply believe in me." And then I wrote another little post that said, "If you want your $5,000, turn to the north, pray." And
yeah, man, you said bathe and pray.
You said what?
Bathe and then relax. It was all a very religious thing, you know.
What does that mean, bathe?
In other words, you know how some religions have the monks and the priests bathe in the Ganges or something?
And you wanted people to bathe, huh?
General, just listen to me, okay?
Yes. I don't know what he's talking about.
I don't either. Right.
So I made this big religious thing, believe in Bill, you know, pray to the north, all this bull crap. And that seemed to only amp it up more. And then the other night I posted something about how the, sharing the Bill Gates photo was magic and that it activated imps that are known as Kangs. And the Kangs...
What am I going to call again?
The imp is called a Kang. That was Bud's idea.
Yeah, I get the idea that you could have an imp called a Kang.
Well, why is it called the Kang?
Because it's just opposite of Kong. You don't get it, huh?
No, I don't get anything any of you people do. And opposite of Kong, the only thing that's what would be opposite of Kong would be a midget ape, wouldn't it?
In any event, General, we created this ridiculous mythology, and people are still messaging me and asking me, how do I get the $5,000?
Well, see, that to me is very pathetic, because that shows how desperate a lot of people are and how not very intelligent.
Well, I can't look at it any other way. You're right. You're right. A lot of people need money really bad. And a lot of people believe that Bill Gates is, and they're right, is extremely wealthy and can afford to give $5,000 to each person that shares his picture. And on top of that, ask how do I mail my, how does he get my address and my phone number, all this stuff. So that's why I wanted to make it even weirder, and that's why we started coming up with this, all this mythology stuff. And then, but when people message me and they ask me, "Dear Mr. Henry, is it true?" I say, "No, it's not true."
Oh, so you tell them it's not true.
Yeah.
Well, then why do they keep on asking?
There's more and more and more and more, man. There's people that are saying, "Is it true, Mr. Henry?" "No, it isn't." "Okay, thank you." "Is it true, Mr. Henry?" "No, it isn't." "Thank you." But then there's more people saying, "Is it true?" Then I get people saying they're going to kick my ass, you know.
They're going to kick your ass, you don't get the $5,000?
Yeah, this one guy, he was like, "I had to kick your ass for saying that." And, you know, a lot of people are pissed off that, it isn't so much the people that are really poor and desperate and need the money that they're not the ones that want to kick my ass. They're the ones that are, "Gee, can we really get the money?" The ones that want to kick my ass are the ones that are posing next to their Chrysler or their Mustang or their 5-speed Camaro. They don't look like they need the money. They're just pissed that they can't get it. And then they go on to tell me how smart they are and how rich they are and how much richer than me they are and how much smarter than me they are. And they're the guys that wanted to know whether they could share their picture and get the $5,000.
So these knuckleheads think they're smarter than you and they're wondering where the $5,000 is.
Well, yeah, I mean, just as an example. So the whole thing has gotten very weird, and it really doesn't show any signs of abating.
Yeah, but you're still doing it and everything.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Because it's funny. It's funny.
Now, do you think messing with people?
Now, hold on for just a minute.
No, well, that is messing with people, Phil.
Hold on for a minute. Hold on for a minute. You know, people need to understand, and they might as well get it now rather than later, that you have to do your research on everything in this world. You have to find out the truth of things. You don't believe things on face. You must, you know, we live in a world where everybody is all of a sudden very, very keen on making sure that what we're being told is true. But I say Bill Gates will give you $5,000 if you share his picture, and every jackball in the world suddenly goes stupid on it, and they expect their $5,000. Mention money, and everyone goes dumb, you know? So while it's sad to see people buy into that, they're also adults, and there's nothing keeping them from doing their due diligence, as we like to say, you know, as they say in the legal profession, do your due diligence and look into it and find out whether the stuff is true or not, you know. And don't blame the guy that told you.
Well, you said about Rod Serling when he did the didn't they blame Rod Serling for the D.B. Cooper?
They did, didn't they?
Yeah, well, D.B. Cooper, the guy that jumped out of the airplane, Rod Serling, the great creator of The Twilight Zone, apparently had written a script or had written something similar to that a few years before, and they there were a couple of reporters that tracked him down and said, do you feel responsible for this D.B. Cooper thing? And he said no, and he issued his very famous quote, which was, I'm responsible to my audience, but I'm not responsible for them. And that's true. That's true. Okay.
So what's the upshot? Are you going to keep on sticking it in and breaking it off?
I'm not sticking it in and breaking it off. It was just an example of what's going on online, and the amount of people who will tell you, on the one hand, they're so smart. Why would you trust them with $5,000? They'd probably wind up smoking it, man, or they'd wind up wiping themselves with it. What the hell? Why am I going to give $5,000 to a guy that's dumb enough to think that he's going to get $5,000?
Yeah, but if you got the $5,000, he ain't that dumb.
If you got the $5,000, he ain't that dumb.
If you promised a guy $5,000 thinking he's stupid for expecting to get the $5,000, but then you give him the $5,000 and he smokes it and wipes with it, then I've been proven true. Then you've been proven. Then why did you give him the $5,000?
Yes. Why'd you do that?
Why don't you just...
Yeah,
see?
No, I don't see. All right, back in whenever I feel like coming back. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. We'll be back if we feel like coming back right after these messages. If we don't come back, then it'll just be... It'll be Bud or someone. Welcome back to the Phil Henry Show here. Austin DeMarco joining us from Lancaster, California. And as often is the case with Mr. Marco, we'll have some commentary from him having to do with law enforcement and the private citizen, and sometimes what one might consider to be the intrusion into the affairs and the civil liberties of the private citizen. And Mr. Marco, always a pleasure. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on your program.
All right, this is about drones, and I've been following this story with some interest, some bemusement, but I can assure you that I have found the entire thing engaging, and these drones that one town in Colorado is considering legalizing shooting down, these drones used not only by the government, perhaps used by private companies, they've got some citizens nervous, is that right?
And I think there's good reason to have to be nervous about the drones that these government, the United States government might use, drug dealers might use, some of these private companies might use. I know Phil Steele is an Army veteran out in Colorado. I'm proposing to our city council here in Lancaster, California, and some of the outlying areas that I don't want to have some flying over my house that's surveilling me, that is using the technology to keep tabs on my property, my motion, my movement, that may be used by a drug dealer or something like this. When a drone flies into the airspace in a town, that makes it illegal, or at least makes it a threat, you know, in a town that recognizes the threat, it can be an act of war, and you may shoot at it. Give you an example, the Deer Trail Ordinance in Deer Trail, Colorado. If the drone flies lower than 1,000 feet, you may shoot at it. Now, there was an August meeting of the city council there in Deer Trail. They thought drone hunting ordinance would be a good idea, and they decided to legalize hunting the drones.
All right, now, what I gather from this Deer Trail, Colorado ordinance that you can shoot a drone down, some of it is tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, well, some of it's tongue-in-cheek, but they're dead serious. They don't want these drones coming out of the sky to take photographs, to survey, to case a house, you know, to do anything that might be considered a threat. And not only that, but private companies like Amazon and these other companies, pizza companies, will be delivering pizzas.
All right, so let me ask you something. What is the threat of a pizza company delivering pizzas? What's the threat of a company, a private company, using it? I understand the drug dealer. I'm not sure I understand law enforcement. Why the threat?
Well, if you've got a drone that's being used to by the government to survey your privacy and to look into your private acts and your private behaviors, that's a threat to your civil liberties.
Well, okay, sure, yeah, it may be if, in point of fact, it is violating your civil liberties, but you know as well as I do that the police have the right, given their job, to look into certain areas of people's lives if they think that there is a crime being committed. So what are we talking about? If there's a law enforcement drone that now has your house under surveillance and you happen to see that, do you shoot at a cop that is surveilling your home? Do you shoot at a cop that's doing that kind of duty?
No, you don't shoot at a cop because he's a human being, but a drone is not a human being. A drone is a machine.
And all right, it's a machine, but it still is doing what that cop is doing. It's staking out your house. You happen to have discovered it, just as many people discover that they're being staked out or watched by police. The violent response, even though it's a machine, you're still destroying a piece of a government property. You're destroying, what you're doing is you're interfering in a police procedure, a police operation. Isn't that against the law?
Well, you know, is it against the law? Yeah, I suppose it is against the law. But you can talk, see, all this clever and fancy talk of yours doesn't negate the fact that you are standing there. Let me ask you this. If your wife is standing in the bedroom and she's taking her clothes off and there's a police drone staring at her, you're not going to take a shot at that?
I would probably, first thing, I'd just get my wife out of the view of the police drone.
Is that your one and only reaction?
If I take a shot at a police drone, if I take a shot at that damn thing, every argument will be made that if it has the capability or if there's a police officer anywhere around there, that someone's got the right to do something to me, like take a shot at me.
So you think they're going to shoot and kill you because you shot at their drone?
I don't know if they'd shoot and kill me. I think that they'd do something to stop me from continuing this assault on their property and on their police operation. Yeah, they may kick down the door. They may come in and arrest me. They may tase me. I don't know what the hell they would do. I would probably just try to get my wife out of... See, the point that I'm making here is I don't think you guys understand...
No, we understand fine, Mr. Henry. I understand totally what a drone is and what it can do. And if I got one that's staring in a bedroom window, if I've got a drone that is used by the United States government, and they may say that they are surveying a drug operation or they have suspicions, but I know full well if there's one looking in a bedroom window, and that is what I draw the line at.
Now, you say that your ordinance is patterned after the Deer Trail, Colorado ordinance, which makes it legal for the people that live in that area to shoot at any drone in their airspace lower than 1,000 feet. The FAA has already issued the statement. I wish I could find it here, but the statement is essentially to the point that I made. The FAA basically says if you damage government property in the midst of a government operation, if you do any of these things, that you are subject to arrest. You also, the thing that they pointed out, and I'd like you to address this, if you shoot down a drone and that thing is falling out of the sky, and I'm assuming you don't have much control over it after you shoot it.
Well, you would want to shoot it down while it's... See, what drones are being flown by drug dealers? What drones is being flown by a burglar? You know.
But if you shoot that thing down and it falls into a populated area, do you have no control over where it's falling?
I don't have any control over where it's... See, again, you've got this clever talk.
I don't know what's clever about it. I'm just asking, if you shoot the thing down and it crashes in a on a school,
Well, people like to say, you know, when they go against something, they'll say, what if it crashes on a school? Everybody says, what if it crashes on a school? If you say to somebody, you know, I want to have the government, you know, I want to have government-funded football stadium, and I say, no, I don't want it. And they say, well, what if I don't build that stadium, and now there's going to be gangland down there, and there are going to be people that are, you know, killing people. If I put the stadium there, wouldn't be no crime.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there's tortured logic that goes along with all kinds of political positions, but I'm just wondering, I know, and you do too, that if you shoot a drone out of the sky, if you're a private citizen, you have no control over where the thing is going to land.
No, I do. I don't have any control, but again, this is a lot of clever talk.
What's clever about it, Mr. Marco?
What is clever about wanting to know where a drone's going to land?
It's clever is that Mr. Henry wants me to say that I don't want to be able to shoot a drone out of the sky because it's going to go out of control and crash into a school, or if the drone's looking in a bedroom window, I can't do anything about it but stand there and let it look me up and down or my wife. And I don't think that's the case.
I don't think it's the case either. If there was an actual robot airplane sitting there at your bed, are you talking about something like out of 1984?
I'm just saying, what are the eventualities?
All right, this is General Shaw. Your name is Austin?
Yes, sir.
I'm General Shaw. I'm a retired United States Army. And my question is very simply this, Austin.
Nice to meet you, sir.
Yes, sir. Nice to meet you. If this is a United States Army a drone or a military drone of some kind, and it is on a U.S. Army mission...
Well, first of all, sir,
Hold on. I'm not done yet. And you've taken a shot at this, attempting to disable it. The response... Or the retaliatory response would be devastating to your home, to you, to everything that is within several hundred yards of wherever you were taking the shot from. So you understand, you've seen those television images of insurgents being blown to bits in Iraq, correct?
Now look, General...
Now, have you seen those television images of insurgents being blown to bits, correct?
Yes, sir, I have.
Well, that's what your friends and relatives will see of you. The last picture they see of you will be a black and white negative of you on video, and there was a man there, then an explosion, and then there's a mess on a road.
Well, you know, I think that's very, very vile and crude of you to say that.
No, I'm telling you, I've seen pictures of it.
All right, so what the general is saying is you'd be attacked.
Yes, you're saying that I would be attacked by... my own government.
If you're trying to interfere with a U.S. Military operation.
All right, here's my statement. How likely is it the U.S. Army is going to be using drones within a civilian area, U.S. within the borders of the United States?
Well, I don't know, but I do know the police.
Well, okay, I mean, I'm just telling you, General, if you're comfortable with your wife taking her underwear off and then a drone sitting there in a window staring at her, then that's you.
No, I'm not comfortable with that. But I'm not familiar with any technology whereby a drone sits there in a window staring at her.
Well, I'll tell you right now, they've got the technology.
And could you tell me where I might look at that technology?
I don't at this time know.
All right, gentlemen, hang on the line here while we talk about drones, what they're able to do, whether you are able to shoot them out of the sky, whether you should shoot them out of the sky, whether it would be legal to shoot them out of the sky, and what would be the retaliatory response on your home, on you, if you actually attacked a government drone. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, what do you mean, they're going to shoot back at you?
Well, yeah, if you shoot at a cop, what do you think he's going to do?
Well, we're talking about a drone.
I know that, but if you shoot at a cop, what's he going to shoot back? You shoot at a drone, you're shooting at some part of a police operation. Same problem, I think. Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. The world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. We're going to get Vernon Dozier on to talk about the State of the Union address here. President Obama just this evening with a State of the Union address that I think has, a lot of people were happy with it. A lot of people were unhappy with it. What are you going to do, man? I mean, Obama is a guy that polarizes just like Bush, polarizes everybody. He's a president. I haven't seen a president. I haven't seen two presidents so absolutely, abjectly reviled by the opposition the way these two, Bush and Obama together, And it's befuddling. It really is. So Vernon Doge is going to join us because he is very much an opponent of President Obama's. I wanted to read this. Wondering if your credit card number could be in the hands of a crook? Look for a charge of $9.84. $9.84. The Better Business Bureau issued a fraud alert last week about a raft of consumer complaints, all reporting the same charge. The business levying this fee may purport to provide customer support, or it may simply identify itself as any one of a number of different websites. But it's not for real. Now, how many of you, and I know there's a lot of you, myself included, we have these small charges. It may be a website that provides some sort of a support for your business. It may be some business that looks as if it's associated with your AT&T or your Verizon or some kind of a wireless bill, you know. But it's a $9.84 charge. It's a fraud. The fraud was uncovered by a former Washington Post reporter who writes an investigation blog for Krebs on Security. It apparently relies on consumer carelessness, where an unfamiliar charge for a large amount would be spotted by most consumers. Little charges can go unnoticed. Krebs writes in his blog that he charges, most of which were reported over the holiday season, may have been spotted because consumers are being more vigilant in the wake of the Target breach. If you don't know, Target was the security of Target, the department store. The red card, the breach of the security of the red card caused people's numbers to be compromised by a hacker. And so Target had a hell of a time cleaning this mess up. Not only cleaning up the mess, but also restoring some level of consumer confidence.
Yeah, my mom was there and they gave her 10% off.
I heard that, yes. They were giving 10% off when I was in line. I was getting something. I think it was I was getting an athletic supporter. I'm sorry.
Well, it's not necessary to say what you were buying.
Well, I'm just simply saying I was at Target.
Okay.
And I was getting a jock strap. The reason why I'm saying that is I was out going to play racquetball with Bill Cummings, who's a friend of Frank's.
That's fine.
All right. Well, then I'm saying I got a jock strap. I went in and I got a jock strap.
Okay, that's the third or fourth time you got the jock strap, but the point is what?
The point is that when I was standing there, the woman was saying, oh, and there's 10% off today at Target, and as soon as I'm done with my job here as a checker, I'm going to go and get my shopping in too, so I can get me the discount. I remember her vernacular was very illiterate, and she was going on and on. And saying this to all of the people. So by the time I got up there with this athletic supporter and these sweat socks, and she started looking over the jock strap, I felt very compromised. As long as we're talking about being compromised, I felt very uncomfortable. And I didn't even want to say anything to her. And she started in on, did you know you get 10% off on your jock strap? And so that's why I'm bringing this up, because it's germane to the story.
Well, what's the point here, General? So the lady was very verbose.
She was very loquacious, very verbose, and she was...
What's that mean, verbose?
Talkative. Talkative, loquacious, talkative, okay.
Yes, and so the woman was saying, well, did you know? And I said, yes, the last five customers you were talking to, I was in line behind, and I heard you mention to each one of them, as you looked their items up and down, just as you're looking at my jockstrap, that there's 10% off. She said, sir, I'm not looking at your jockstrap. I said, well, you're holding the box. You're reading the instructions. She said, yes, I'm reading the instructions on how to put one of these things on because I've never had to. I'm a woman, if you haven't noticed.
Oh, you had this conversation with this woman?
Oh, yes, and it gets better. And I said, no, I hadn't noticed. And that's when she, get this, she pulled the jockstrap out of the box and put it on her head as if it was some kind of a weird slingshot that she attached to her nose. And then I made the high sign to one of the managers. I said, your checker here is nuts. Let's get some cottage cheese.
Wait just a minute, General.
No, I won't be laughed at.
Now sit down. Sit down. You can't get out of here. Are you telling me the truth here?
Yeah, General told me the story.
I'm telling you the absolute truth. She looked at me like I was the scum of the earth, pulled the jock strap out of the box and stuck it on her head as if her nose was the sort of the business end of a slingshot. Well, sounds like she was, yeah, she was crackers.
Yes, like she was just waiting for some trigger.
Well, trigger what? I said to her, I was very pleasant with her.
Well, it sounded to me like, I'm not saying you caused this. I'm not saying you caused this. But whatever you said set her off. You said something like, yeah, I've heard you for the last five customers, right?
Yes, I told her the truth. I said, yes, I know this 10% off. And I said, you're looking at my jockstrap. She says, I want to know how it works. I've never used one. She pulled it out of the box, draped it over her head like it was some kind of a weird nose guard after you break your nose. You ever seen nose?
Have you ever seen what?
Have you ever seen the nose guards when someone breaks their nose?
Yeah, I've seen them.
That's what it looked like.
She took the jock strap out of the box and draped it over her head.
Yes. How many times do you want me to say it?
General, that's a pretty weird story, man. You know, people are going to ask some questions about it.
All right, so you asked your questions.
Man, so what did the management came over, huh?
Oh, yeah, this young guy over near the, I don't know what it was. It looked like one of the doors, you know, going to the office, wearing the red vest. But he didn't have the apron on. Usually, you know that they're an underling or one of the lower-level people if they're wearing an apron or some kind of ridiculous-looking shoes. But this, he looked like he might be a manager. So I waved him over, and I said, I think she's all wrong. I said, I think she's gone wrong. And he asked her, Mary, what city are you in? And she said, Pittsburgh, and it's raining. And,
all right, now I know you're full of crap.
Why do you say that?
Because that's a line from Requiem for a Heavyweight.
Yeah, I remember Mr. Henry talk about it.
I don't know if she said that. That's just a line that came to mind.
Well, what did the man ask her?
He said, Dolores, what city are you in? And she said something like, Pittsburgh, and it's raining. I forget what it was.
Well, that poor lady obviously needs help, huh?
I would think so, yes.
Why were we talking? Oh, Target. Target, yeah.
Yes, Target.
How did we get off on this, man? This is the weird. That story is far more interesting than anything I'm reading here about this Better Business Bureau, $9.84.
Well, I thought you'd like it.
I don't know, man.
Well, why are you looking at me as if I'm the one that flipped?
It's just a bizarre story, that's all. Just a whack story. You show up with a jock strap, and she puts it on her head.
Well, that's like that one story you were talking about, the guy who pulled his pants to...
Never mind. Yeah, that's... you know, I...
But come on, you gotta tell a story about that.
It was years ago. He didn't pull his pants down. It was just a flasher. It was years ago. I was working for an old station here in town called K-West. And it's on the... It was at 106. It's where Power 106 is now. It used to be K-West. It used to be a rock station. And I was working for them as a disc jockey. And we used to have free concerts at the John Anson Ford Theater. I don't know if there's anybody listening in the L.A. area that remembers the free shows we used to have at the John Anson Ford Theater.
Is that named after John Ford, the director?
No. It's named after a guy named John Anson Ford.
Yeah, well, I know that. So what Margaret's saying, is that John Ford, the director?
No, it's not John Ford, the director. It's a guy named John Anson Ford.
And it wasn't the director?
No, it was some guy who was on the city council or something.
What? How many guys named John Ford gonna be there?
I told you it ain't John Ford, the director. Anyway, we had these free concerts, meaning bands would come into town that were going to be playing there, and they had an album out, and they were very, very gracious and would contribute, you know, a couple hours of the time and come out and play for free. And it was a lot of fun. And we had some... So I remember seeing Ronnie Montrose there. He put a hell of a show on for free in that little tiny theater. Everybody went nuts. And we're letting people in, and there's some jackass in an overcoat. This goofy-looking kid in a long blue overcoat and sneakers pulling his overcoat open. The guy was stark naked, flashing all these chicks.
Oh, my God. And you told me, didn't someone kick his ass or something?
Well, no, I know. Nobody kicked his ass, but he got dragged out of there pretty fast. But that's nothing compared to your story, General.
I don't know. I mean, this woman, all she did was drape a jockstrap on the face.
Yeah, but this other guy might have draped something else on the face.
Yow. Shut up. All right, well, there you go, folks. That's tonight's Weird Stuff segment. That's tonight's People in Public with weird things that they put on their faces or not. I'm Phil Henry. We'll be right back here on PhilHenryShow.com. Well, enough about this.
This story about the fake charge, you'll just...
Never mind that. That's boring compared to what we just, heard tonight. Phil Henry Show, final segment of our radio show coming up here. Go online at PhilHenryShow.com, get a backstage pass, and enjoy our nightly video cast. We are going to start to feature a free video cast, one free video cast a week. And, of course, head on over and buy a year's Backstage Pass subscription and get one free for your Valentine. Walking on the moon. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com with Dean Wheeler joining us. You know, I didn't see you at all, Dean. We were in San Francisco, and I did not have the opportunity to see you, and I'm very, very disappointed that I didn't. I hope you're well.
We're doing great, Phil, and we did want to come out and see you there at the Eureka Theater, but Emeralda was, she's been very busy. She's been very busy.
I know you've got her booked into a lot of gigs.
Oh, yeah. We had, as a matter of fact, the night that you were there at the Eureka, we were way north of you in Santa Rosa at a little place called the Imperial, and a little club, a little jazz club. Had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
All right, what did you think of the president's... Actually, you want to talk about Ted Cruz, don't you?
Yeah, I want to talk about Ted Cruz because Ted Cruz is a dangerous, dangerous man. He is talking about the president breaking the law. And because Ted Cruz, I heard this man Vernon Dozier say that President Obama... with his, quote, olive oil voice and Guinea charm, and he was quoting The Godfather, couldn't believe my ears, you know? And if this is what we're dealing with the Tea Party, we've got a lot of really small brains that we have to deal with. Now, Ted Cruz is one of the more miniature brains out there, but he came up with something that's very tough to I think, argue against, and that is, number one, calling Obama a lawbreaker. He said it's an imperial presidency, and the president's a lawbreaker because of the executive orders. It's very difficult to get the average voter to understand that the president's not a lawbreaker, that he's doing the right thing by using executive orders, as, Margaret, you said, that Ronald Reagan used.
Yes, Reagan used 213. Far, far more, almost 100 more than President Obama. And the argument that it's Ronald Reagan and therefore he gets to do it and Barack Obama doesn't is the argument of a child. It's not an adult argument. So there is that.
Well, I hope so, because this is a tough one to get the average voter to understand that the president's not breaking the law. And there is this man, Ted Cruz, who is very sinister in his approach. I think you understand he's been described as a psychopath, that is, a man with no conscience. But it's going to take some work over time to deal with this.
Well, let me make a suggestion, okay?
By all means.
If Ted Cruz is serious that Obama is a lawbreaker, then all the congressman has to do and all any of those numbskulls that think Obama's breaking the law have to do is impeach him. Now, you can certainly impeach a man for breaking the law if he's president of the United States. You've never had a better case in your life. Go for it, right? It's one thing that, we're on shaky legal ground, but if Ted Cruz is a brain surgeon and he thinks that Obama's breaking the law, impeach the hell out of the guy and kick his ass out of there.
Well, that's a very good point. I don't know why we didn't think about that.
You're saying impeach Obama, or you're saying Ted Cruz should impeach him?
If Ted Cruz believes that Obama's broken the law, then all he has to do is impeach the president for breaking the law, because that's an impeachable offense.
Right. Well,
that sounds good. I don't know. Why doesn't he do that?
Why don't he do that?
What's wrong with you guys?
Well, I wasn't expecting that kind of clarity, I guess. I'm sorry.
I was nervous.
Well, don't be nervous. If Ted Cruz, who's never been the brightest bulb on the tree, but because he is the one-eyed man in a room full of blind people, He is indeed the king. If Ted Cruz says that Obama is lawless and is breaking the law, then it's a very easy thing to impeach him because presidents are not allowed to break the law. You know, I mean, look, this is a Congress, especially a Tea Party coalition, that if it doesn't know how to do anything, it knows how to do one thing, and that's waste time, tie up the business of government with as much meaningless stuff as you can so that you can wreck the government and in the process wreck the country's chances at recovering and moving forward. And that's what the Tea Party agenda has been.
Phil, I'm not asking you to come out here and make these statements because those are pretty bold.
No, but every now and again I get sick of this crap.
So you're saying that if Ted Cruz says that Obama's lawless, what should he do?
He said he should, but...
Impeach him! What are you guys, are you nuts or something?
Well, hold on, Phil, hold on.
No, I'm not, no, not nothing. Impeach him!
Are you yelling at me?
Yes, I'm yelling at you. All you gotta do, if the guy's a lawbreaker... Oh, look, she's walking out of here.
I won't be yelled at.
Well, you know what? I guess it hurts, man, when you're discovered to be not all that bright. All you have to do is impeach the guy. Okay, Dean?
Thank you. I hadn't thought of that. And so you can impeach him.
You can impeach the guy if he's breaking the law.
Yeah, all right.
So next time Ted Cruz says that Obama's lawless, you do that, man. You impeach him. Man, oh, man.
I just went and got some tissue.
What, you all crying and everything?
I don't like being yelled at.
Margaret, I'm sorry that I yelled at you, but if you want Ted Cruz to shut his big fat... Nothing's going to shut that guy up. That guy will keep on talking because he is... It's impossible to embarrass Ted Cruz. Like most of these numbs... Like Rand Paul, you can't embarrass him. Rand Paul thought that... What was it? Chuck Grassley... or Chuck Hagel, excuse me, was a member of a Friends of Hamas, an organization that never existed. Now, that's Rand Paul because he's stupid... he thought the organization existed. He didn't look into it. He just ran his big fat yap. You can't embarrass a guy like that because he's just going to say something dumb and the people are loving it. Love him. It's like Michelle Bachmann when she thought that Obama was spending, what was it, $12 million a day traveling through India. The number any kid with basic math would know would probably bankrupt the government within months as far as the petty cash goes for presidents traveling. But she's so dumb, she doesn't understand the math of it, that she went ahead and repeated that on TV. These people are stupid, man. Okay? So they're always going to leave themselves open for something. That's why Palin is, not only is she not running for president this time out, that's why she never had a chance for running for president at all, because she ain't that bright.
Well, you were a big Sarah Palin fan, as I remember.
Not a big Sarah Palin fan. I just didn't understand why people had to lean on her for her sex. I mean, there was a whole thing about Sarah Palin being a woman that people didn't need to go to, man. I didn't think so. They just needed to say her politics were and her politics remain just absolutely mired in imbecility and 19th century notions and turn of the century quasi-progressive ideas that don't work anymore and a little bit of the combining of church and state. I mean, she's a mess, man. And that's why she never had a shot at being president, vice president, or anything else. Now you come along with Ted Cruz or Rand Paul. These guys aren't going to get elected president. They won't get elected to anything. There's going to be a Democrat president in 2016. There will be another Democrat elected president.
You just said a Democrat president. The Republicans like to say that.
Yeah, you got to say Democratic.
Okay, there's going to be a Democratic president in 2016. Not because the Democrats are so fantastic, but the Republicans have so butchered their chances by letting these Tea Party jackasses take over that there will not be a Republican elected president of the United States in 2016, period. And that wasn't the Democrats doing, that's the Republicans. I've never seen a political party so carve up its own chances to get anything right. But they did it, man. They did it.
Well, I hope you got that off your chest.
Well, there was a lot to get off my chest tonight, but we will be back here tomorrow night on the Phil Hendry Show at 7. And, you know, there's going to be a lot going on the pre-show tomorrow. We're going to be talking about a lot on the pre-show, just as we talked about a lot on the pre-show tonight. The pre-show is on the website only. It's not on the air. because there are some big decisions to be made. We are in the middle of one of the most groundbreaking and revolutionary periods in the history of media. And one of the things that is happening, ladies and gentlemen, is that radio is going away. Talent isn't going away, and the platform for our show isn't going away. Radio is. We're going to talk about it on the pre-show tomorrow, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.